The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
New Packers coach Matt LaFleur makes his first big hire, and it is at offensive coordinator. How do you feel about Nathaniel Hackett? We polled you guys, and we'll get your reaction and ours. It is the APC podcast here at AcmePackingCompany.com, part of SB Nation, talking Packers all of the time at the APC pod on Twitter, is where you can find us there. The APC podcast at gmail.com for long form nonsense. I am Zach Rapport, holding it down, a lonely man in an apartment in Queens. Ben Foldy is knee deep in a new job, so he's out this week, but a game time decision. Feeling a little under the weather through the magic telephone machine. I am joined by Alex Patakis. Alex, how are you doing?
I wish I was doing a little bit better. I could join you in person and not compromise the audio quality of this podcast, but I've been quarantined to my lonely apartment in Brooklyn. I've actually been sleeping on the couch the last 3 nights, and I've grown quite used to it. It's kind of comforting in a weird way.
This might maybe that's a new arrangement you'll get used to as you head into married life.
Yeah, I think my fiance is liking it a little bit too much. She kind of walks out and struts like Deion Sanders in the morning, almost bragging at like the great night of sleep that she got. But I think maybe I've got one more on the couch before I can be allowed back in. We'll see.
Yeah, you're going on is this month 3 of being sick? You seem like you've been sick for a while, man.
Yeah, really. I mean, last week I felt good, and then I guess another weekend of mistreating the body, even though I didn't really do much. But yeah, it's just that time of year, you know. And bronchitis is a bitch, isn't it? Like, there's nothing you can really do except wait it out. Yeah. So what I'm doing.
Yeah, New York is not kind to the immune system in general, and especially in the winter. But let's get down to football business. It's been a few weeks since we last talked, and Matt LaFleur. You can hear the music this time.
Yeah, this time I can, oddly enough. When I was in the studio setting, I couldn't. But...
Oh, Matt LaFleur. We had an intro press conference. We had an intro press conference with the big Irish goofball and Brian Gutekunst, GM, sandwiching Matt LaFleur, new Packers head coach, in between. I felt kind of sorry for him in that press conference. But that happened since we last recorded, and I was wondering, you know, we haven't done note nugs in a while because we usually don't do them in the off season. But this is, you know, it's a unique opportunity. First impressions of our new head coach at the microphone. Do you have a note nug, some kind of takeaway from that press conference? Maybe not even LaFleur, but the whole thing in general.
Well, you know, Matt LaFleur, it's kind of like anything. I just miss it so much. Yeah. I feel like my LaFleur impression is just going to have to be McCarthy saying the things that LaFleur says. Like, the Packers coach will never sound any different to me.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. I think the obvious one was just that, you know, and the worthwhile one to talk about, I think, certainly, I feel like it's a little bit bigger than a note nug, perhaps, but the whole Matt LaFleur maybe like sharing a little too much about Aaron Rodgers and then getting walked back by both Mark Murphy and Goody.
Yeah, they almost
pretty emphatically.
If they could have ripped the mic away from him, they might have done it at that moment.
Yeah, could have been the shortest lived head coach maybe ever. Even shorter than Josh McDaniels, perhaps, with the Colts, because it sounded like, and I believe LaFleur's version of the story completely, that that Aaron Rodgers had placed a call to LaFleur probably when the Packers had maybe told him that LaFleur is a serious candidate who'd be moving on, perhaps even a guy they would be looking into hiring. And we know this because LaFleur said that he felt pretty good about his chances when he heard from Aaron Rodgers. And then they kind of then just immediately interrupted him and tried to say, well, no, you know, that's not how he found out he was getting the job. This was a call that was placed after a decision was already made, yada, yada. That's certainly not the case.
I think Gutekunst like cut him off, cut off Matt LaFleur and said something like, basically, like, to be clear, you know, we had Aaron reach out to him after the decision was made, which totally contradicts as far as the timeline goes.
Yeah. And if that is their story, then I would say, okay, I guess they're not wrong to do so, but they should probably be better at communicating, because if you are prepared to offer a guy a job, you should remember to tell him that before your quarterback calls him, right? So, like, either way, I think they look a little bit silly, but it's not really a big deal, because ultimately I think it's something that at least I, and I think maybe you, when we had that conversation about whether or not the Packers should involve Aaron Rodgers to some degree, it's clear that they did, at least in some measure.
Yeah.
To, you know, maybe, again, I said it was something that needed to be done to create buy-in up front. And if that is literally as he's about to get the job, then I consider that to be pretty upfront. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah. If it means that if all of that rolls up to Aaron Rodgers is happy with the decision, then I'm happy with the decision. But you said something about Gutekunst and Murphy kind of not being, and LaFleur as well, not being on the same page there as far as the messaging of that. And I think, and you said maybe that's not a big deal, but I think that points to something else that I wanted to sort of make my note nug. The power structure there. I want to revisit the idea of the power structure, because Mark Murphy, you know, had the opportunity at this press conference, and I actually want to credit John Meerdink, who pointed this out recently on his pod as well, but I thought of it as well as soon as I saw it happen on the presser. Mark Murphy did not give back the reins of power to Brian Gutekunst. That press conference was the moment, I thought, and I had talked about this a couple weeks ago on the pod. I thought, oh, maybe they'll make this coaching hire and then Mark Murphy will sort of step back and say, okay, now this power structure has served its purpose and I can sort of hand back the reins of overseeing the football side of the operation to the football guy I hired in Brian Gutekunst. But that didn't happen. Mark Murphy made it perfectly clear, because he was asked directly about it, that the power structure would remain as is. And I don't know, I've said it before on the show, I don't think that he's power hungry, and I do think that he wants to do the right thing. But as you can probably tell from the setup here and the tone of my voice, I'm not sure that the right thing is, you know, not letting your football people make the football decisions. I just thought that was the time when that could have happened, and it didn't happen. I was disappointed to hear that.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either. I mean, you've gone through, you've kind of, you know, had the search, and you hired your guy, and he certainly, I think, said a couple of things in the press conference too to make it feel like Gutekunst was very much on board with LaFleur and kind of almost a driving force in the hire.
Yeah.
So at that point, you would almost hope, okay, well, now you can kind of hand football back to football people and be done with it. Because I don't know, I guess it makes me wonder why this whole structure existed in the first place.
The power arrangement as it is, it just feels weird and unnecessary and murky. And why would you mess with, you know, a formula that had been working?
Right. Yeah. And now, especially the people working under him now in very prominent roles are young, inexperienced people in terms of coaches, in terms of some front office people. And it just feels like he feels like he has to do something. So he's trying things, Murphy. But I don't think he knows what he's doing. Because hiring a head coach at a university and, you know, hiring a couple of other, you know, athletic program people, whatever, is not the same as running an NFL franchise. So I still think maybe he has good intentions, but he probably just has no clue what's going on because he was kept in the dark for a really long time.
Yeah, I think he has good intentions. I do think, you know, people make fun of him when he says he's a football guy. I do think he's a football guy, but he doesn't work in a football job, and he's inserted himself into a football job. And I think, you know, I think we all think rather needlessly. But, you know, we could talk about this all day, and I'm sure we'll talk about it all off season. But let us move on to a quick update on the coaching staff as that takes shape under new head coach Matt LaFleur. The McCarthy era has come to an end, and we're sort of cycling through some of those, getting some of those coaches out, retaining some, but getting out others. So let's just bring the listeners up to date and do a quick rundown. Firstly, of the coaches so far who have been retained. This is not an exhaustive list, but as complete as I could make on the fly here. Mike Pettine, most importantly, defensive coordinator, is now confirmed coming back. It's a little bit of old news at this point. Defensive line coach Jerry Montgomery also coming back. Running backs coach Ben Sermons confirmed coming back. Tight ends coach Brian Angelicchio. Not sure how you pronounce. I'm never sure how you pronounce his name. He's coming back. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he's a good coach. I don't know. The Packers have had underwhelming tight end play for a number of years, but maybe that has more to do with the parts to work with than it does with the coach. But I think more importantly, Alex, what I want to focus on is the coaches who are not coming back. So quickly, Joe Philbin appears to be gone. Quarterbacks coach Cignetti is gone. Thank goodness. Patrick Graham, the defensive run game coordinator, is rumored out to Miami, I think. And really notably, and this is where we'll pause and talk for a while, Joe Witt Jr. and James Campen, two guys that we thought, we expected the Packers to keep, that we thought there was a good case for them. They are good coaches. They've been around a long time. Joe Witt Jr., the defensive pass game coordinator. James Campen, a very well-respected offensive line coordinator. Actually, I believe he even predates McCarthy in Green Bay. Both of them gone, and I believe both of them at this point have gone to the Cleveland Packers. I mean, Cleveland Browns, yeah. As they assemble their sort of Green Bay East team. I was shocked by both these names. What about you?
Yeah, I'm a little shocked. I think some people were very upset. I guess I'm a little less upset at the idea of them not being around. And look, I mean, Joe Witt Jr., I think from the way players talk about him, from the way media talks about him, from all the stories we read about what he did and kind of their philosophy of taking corners who didn't play corner, you know, turning them into something, not having to break bad habits. That was all really good stuff. And it was really feel good when Tremont Williams, a undrafted free agent, and Sam Shields, a seventh round draft pick, and all these guys were producing and ultimately helping them win a Super Bowl. But I guess I'm a little bit surprised at how, you know, the Packers have been doomed for really since they've won the Super Bowl, in large part because of their lack of production, lack of talent development at the corner position, which maybe save from this year, which Jair Alexander has been pretty, I don't know, abysmal. So I'm not going to like be up in arms about that guy not coming back. I know a lot of it was, you know, we like to blame Dom Capers on a difficult scheme and that they always had young guys in that scenario. But, you know, they invested their first two draft picks of a draft that is now almost an entire waste of a draft in corners that ultimately didn't really pan out and that fit that mold.
And it is also up to the position coaches. You know, if the scheme from the coordinator is complicated, part of that falls on the position coaches to make that, you know, learnable for their, you know, for their players.
Yeah, totally. I think Joe Witt had some really big hits and big wins and really good success stories.
No doubt.
With some really good players. But I think expecting him to take the guy who doesn't have experience playing corner and turning him into a corner every time, he didn't live up to an unrealistic expectation. Just put it that way.
Yeah.
So if somebody else is going to come in and coach in the secondary that probably has a little bit easier time and, you know, is taking players who played corner and kind of continuing that education, like, so be it. So I that one, I'm not, I guess I'm just not as sad about it. Like, yeah, there needs to be change. Like, how many defensive guys do we want to hold on to when every year the problem is their defense sucks?
Yeah. And one of the things that Murphy said in that LaFleur intro presser was that they were trying to, you know, the players said, the sort of leadership council said, that they felt that there wasn't enough accountability from the previous coaching staff and players, but also the coaching staff. And that was something that they were looking for in new coaches. So I think some of these coaches that they're letting go, and Joe Witt Jr. is an example of these, are like the, you know, they're the McCarthy era coaches. And so maybe that says something about, you know, maybe there were players that said, you know, this is a position group that was not held accountable enough for bad play. And actually, as I'm saying it out loud, I know that to be true over the last few years. I mean, you know, Jamarius Randall comes to mind.
Right. Yeah. So, and Joe Witt will now probably get to coach him in Cleveland and have a time, yeah, you know, and I think they'll succeed and I think they'll do really well.
Yep.
I don't know why they just didn't hire McCarthy if they're going to go this far, like basically bring in all these guys who have been tied to McCarthy for a decade.
Maybe they were just like, you know, that's a little too on the nose.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's too obvious. Like, yeah, okay, maybe after week five, if Kitchens gets fired or something. But and with Campen too, Packers have, again, some ridiculous success stories. Campen, I guess I feel a little bit more for.
Yeah.
Because the Packers made this organizational decision to just not give a shit about the interior offensive line for a really long time and got away with it because a lot of guys would step up. But, you know, they've had some pretty glaring lack of development at that position too, because it rears its ugly head every time Brian Bulaga gets hurt and we laugh at the idea of a Jason Spriggs protecting an Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
There's a lot of high draft capital guys that are now kind of names we mention and laugh about.
Yeah.
On the Packers, who are still lingering around the Packers, even on the roster, hanging on by a thread, that were these guys' responsibilities to develop. And you know, some of it's on Ted and not recognizing maybe that they aren't actually great talents, and some, yeah, of it's on the guys who are tasked with bringing that talent out of them. So I get it.
I want to turn your attention and the listeners' attention to an article that Justice Mosqueda, an article that he wrote for Optimum Scouting, sort of trying to quantify in a metrics-based way sort of the success rate of offensive line coaches, how much they matter, you know, to the success of that team's offensive line. And I thought he did a really thorough job. I encourage everyone to check it out. In fact, I'll make sure to, after this episode drops, to tweet out a link to it. But so Campen, you know, is well respected. He came in number 14 on that list of, I think, 34 names this year that were offensive line coordinators or offensive line coaches. He came in 14th, which is, you know, it's not bad. It's solid, but there are better names out there, and a few of them are actually available. So this could be an opportunity for the Packers to actually upgrade from, you know, a position where they already had a good coach to a better coach. Two of those names that come to mind, I don't know if you know anything about these people, but Dave DeGuglielmo, I think I said that right, is the Colts, or was the Colts offensive line coach. We saw massive improvements in their line throughout the year this season. He came in ranked number 12th on Justice's list. But just after the news that he was on the market dropped, Frank Polak, the offensive line coach of the Bengals, became in need of a job. He's number 5 on that list. Do you know anything about those players? What do you think about the Packers' chances of nabbing someone who's actually better than Campen?
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting move, you know, to be able to upgrade there. I mean, the Colts offensive line was ridiculous this year. I mean, for Andrew Luck to barely get touched, you know, throughout the course of the season as he did. I mean, we saw just how dangerous that made them. So I think, yeah, I mean, as evidenced by that piece, if you can quantify a position coach's value, which again, it's a, you know, it's a nice thing to try to be able to do. There's upgrades to be had out there. I guess I just want to go back to an overall point because I feel like I could have said all of this in like one sentence. If you're going to move on from the McCarthy era, you got to move on from the McCarthy era.
Yeah.
And I think to retain those guys just because they had success in the past, it'd be the same as retaining McCarthy. So did he. Like if he were gone and he's looking and half of his assistants are being retained, then what's the point of getting a new coaching staff to begin with? You know, like if you're going to move on, sometimes you have to move on. That means moving on from more than just the head coach. It's a lot of other guys that you like, but it's just necessary.
Yeah, I totally agree. And speaking of moving on, let us now move on to the biggest bit of news. And that is Nathaniel Hackett is the new offensive coordinator, Matt LaFleur's first big hire. And we asked you guys out there how you felt about this hire. And I'll read those poll results and then I'll pose the same question to you, Alex. You know, we put out on Twitter. We actually did the same thing 2 weeks ago when they hired LaFleur, but the Packers just hired Nathaniel Hackett as their non-play calling offensive coordinator. And that makes me feel blank. Great, fine, not good, or shrug emoji. And actually, I kind of think that the more I think about this poll, there's a lot of overlap, I think, emotionally between fine and shrug emoji. So it kind of makes sense that they both make up the largest percentage of respondents here. But we had about 1,200 replies. 45% of respondents say they feel fine with this hire. And then 33% is shrug emoji, which is basically, I don't know. Only 16% said great. And only 6% said not good. I was surprised that number wasn't higher. But not surprised at the overall trend of the results of this poll. Alex, what do you think? Nathaniel Hackett as offensive coordinator, that makes you feel blank.
I mean, some either shrug emoji or fine. Whichever one has less votes, I'll vote for, just to pull it even closer.
Shrug emoji it is. You are nothing if not consistent.
Yeah, I'll go shrug emoji on that one. And it's not a shrug emoji in a way that's like, you know, I don't come into it. First, I want to say that there's a lot of things that I like about it. You know, I'll go shrug emoji because I can't say for certain I think it's going to work out.
Yep.
Can't say for certain this guy is great. But I mean, I like that he's young. I know that sounds really stupid. And we keep talking about, oh, this guy, you know, LaFleur is young. He's good looking. Oh, Hackett's young. But
again, ageism, blatant ageism.
Well, it's a trend in the NFL, the copycat league, right? I mean, like, got new ideas, guys who have seen some things. And boy, has Nathaniel Hackett seen some things.
Let's pause for a moment on that and talk for just list off for a second the quarterbacks that he has seen, which is Blake Bortles, EJ Manuel, Kyle Orton, something called a Jeff Tool, and a few others. I mean, Kyle Orton, I feel like, is the most starter worthy out of any of those quarterbacks. He's basically, you know, he's had nothing to work with.
Completely. I mean, his entire history, even going back to when I think he was like a quality control guy in Tampa under John Gruden, they didn't even have quarter. They had Bruce. I'm reading a Tex Western's piece of Corporate Overlord. He wrote about like the complete history of Hackett. Bruce Gradkowski, Tim Rattay. I mean, like, it's like Tim this guy Rattay. Is allergic. This guy has been deprived of competent quarterback play his entire career. Save for his time in Syracuse with Ryan Nassib, who was actually a decent college quarterback. So, I mean, I saw a lot of debate about this. Like, you know, just because a guy has been able to have some success with some bad quarterback, you know, via the running game, doesn't mean he's going to be able to coach a quarterback.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to spin this positively, I would say that to be able to have it, you know, one, Blake Bortles, two, a pretty injured offensive skill position set in 2017 with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Don't forget, when they were playing in that AFC Championship game, Allen Robinson had missed most of the year with an injury. They had a lot of different guys who were actually pretty good. I mean, it was an offense that was made up of Blake Bortles, but not just that. You know, he's throwing a Dede Westbrook and, like, you know, a couple other guys who were, you know, nothing with nothing. You know, Keelan Cole. Like, I mean, these aren't Devontae Adams type of players. And they were the fifth best scoring offense in the league.
They're not even Geronimo, you know, Allison type of players.
Yeah, I mean, they're at best Geronimo Allison. So he's coached around limitations. Now, you could say, like, well, that's totally different than coaching a guy who has very little limitations. But, I mean, you should deserve some – you get some credit for getting the fifth-ranked scoring offense with Blake Bortles at the helm. And again, you know, offensive numbers are skewed by how good their defense was. I totally understand that. But I would also just like to say, Zach, just to kind of wrap up this point, I don't mind having a guy who's got experience coaching a quarterback with limitations, because there's going to come a time soon where Aaron Rodgers' limitations are going to set in.
Yep.
Like, I know that Tom Brady seems ageless. There are limitations there, but guess what? The Patriots cover them up so damn well that it doesn't feel like it.
Yep.
And I guarantee you, Aaron Rodgers' body is going to fail him. And when that happens, I want him still producing at a very, very high level for this team. And I think that is when having guys who coach not the best talent and are super reliant on them, but allow that talent to be relying on them as coaches to help them fit into a scheme without being superhuman. That's when you're really tested. And he's proven he can do that. And he's proven he can do it with the running game too. And if this means that the Packers run a little bit more, I'm not saying take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands, but you've got two pretty good running backs.
Yeah.
The whole point of the whole McCarthy thing was, don't make Aaron do everything. Like, damn it, McCarthy. Why does Aaron have to do everything? So I would like a guy who's so used to doing everything himself because his quarterback sucks to kind of meet Aaron in the middle here. So if I, again, it may sound like an overly optimistic and overly positive spin on it, but I'm not going to hold the quarterbacks that he had to coach against him, because that is not his fault.
Yeah. And I think to put a finer point on what you just said, and I couldn't agree more, a word that comes to mind for me is adaptable. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, Aaron Rodgers, his skill set is going to change. The way that he needs to play the game is going to change over the next, you know, 3 to 6, however many years he has left. It's going to change, and you need to have a coaching staff that is prepared to cater to those changes. That wasn't going to be Mike McCarthy, a guy who admittedly revisits the playbook every 4 years, I think he said. He's so systematic. And sometimes a franchise needs that. They need a program builder who is very deliberate and calculated and stays the course and stays on message. But that isn't this team anymore. They need someone. They need people who on a yearly, and in fact, sometimes a monthly or even weekly basis, can say, you know, who do we have available? How can we get it done this week? How can we get it done this month? So I think that in that way, I'm as well optimistic about Hackett. He is part of the, I guess, what some people would call the Bill Walsh West Coast offense philosophy, which differs a little bit from Matt LaFleur, but I think that is as well LaFleur kind of challenging himself to pool ideas and again be adaptable.
Yeah, completely. And it's not like, you know, he found success. Like, I would like new ideas in the running game, because the funny thing about the 2017 Jaguars is, okay, he was coaching, you know, they ran the ball a lot because Bortles sucks. Everyone knew the run was coming. They still couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
You know, imagine Aaron Rodgers with an actual fierce running attack that isn't just used to kind of, you know, provide some balance, you know, give the offensive lineman a break, but something that's a true weapon. We're talking about a Jaguars offense that went to Pittsburgh and hung 45. Well, their defense scored a touchdown in that game, but in a divisional playoff game, you know, Ben Roethlisberger threw 5 touchdowns and lost to the Jags 45-42.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, when you look at the personnel the Jaguars had, that's a coaching masterpiece, man.
Did you read the piece from Michael Cohen about in The Athletic about him? A coach that he had worked with, or a player, I'm actually not sure, referred to him as a mad scientist, quote unquote. And I don't know. I encourage everyone to look that up. TheAthletic.com. Michael Cohen put out a piece, and what I took away from that is Hackett is someone who loves to constantly tinker with the offense and, again, be adaptable. He's someone who, they call him the mad scientist, because he literally will, you know, close the door and sit in the dark in the film room and like go to the whiteboard and just go away for days at a time trying to figure out, you know, how to exploit a defense. And, you know, I don't think we should hold it against him that he had to do that with EJ Manuel and Kyle Orton and Blake Bortles. I think, if anything, if we have someone who's so willing to put in the time and energy and understand the importance of constantly changing, and again, that is also a theme that LaFleur has touched on in his brief couple of interviews after taking the job here in Green Bay, is that idea of constantly changing. If you're not constantly changing, you're just getting worse. I don't know. I think it's I feel positive. I'm going to go shrug emoji to tie it back to our poll, just because we obviously just don't know. And it's very on brand for us on the APC pod to play it straight down the middle and manage expectations. But I don't know. I feel good about it.
Yeah, I do too. And I think if somebody on the APC Slack, or maybe it was on Twitter, pointed out he likes to curse. That's another big one for me. I love that. And maybe he's our guy that we'll be able to imitate in the fake press conference.
Yeah, we need some personality. I guess maybe, you know, when you're working on your LaFleur personality, you kind of, there's like a vocal, a little bit of a fry crack. There's a stammering that sort of happens. And reportedly, he's not like that behind closed doors. The players really love him. He really connects with them. But yeah, on the microphone, he is hard to imitate.
I would say that I believed him after his first 30 seconds of speaking that this truly was his dream job, because I have never seen someone look so nervous introduced as the next head coach of a team.
Yeah, it's funny. He told that story about being speechless when he got the call. I'm like, oh, you're still kind of speechless because you're putting words yeah. together, but it's not necessarily coming across like someone who is, speaking in real time. But that's going to do it for us, speaking in real time on the APC podcast. Alex, thanks for making some time and calling in, bronchial infection and all. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for doing it and steering the ship.
Shout out to
better and better at every week.
Oh, thank you. I try. I do try. And a shout out to Ben Foley, who again is knee deep in work, and we'll get him back on as soon as things settle down there.
He's covering real life things, people, with consequences.
It's true. He's over at Bloomberg. Can we say that? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. I'll ask him and then maybe I'll edit it out. Yeah, that's going to do it. We got some playoff football here. Yada, yada. Who cares? Conference championships, then a Super Bowl. Lots of offseason left for the Packers. We are going to be there every step of the way. Draft season is coming up. Going to come up before we know it. The combine, all that fun stuff. And then the game of groans, all the storylines that we love and loathe from the offseason are all ahead of us. So keep it locked in to acmepackingcompany.com and the APC podcast at the APC pod on Twitter, the APC podcast at gmail.com, at Zach Rapport, at Alex Patakis, at Ben Foldy. Subscribe on iTunes, give us a rating, all that fun stuff. Okay, I'm almost out of breath and we are almost out of Poco. We will see you guys real soon.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.